My guest at this time is Sherilyn Hartley-Lebon. She is the co-chair of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. We've had many of their experts on a variety of issues over the past months and years. It is a coalition of black conservative leaders, and they are now speaking out on what they consider the failure of Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty 50 years after it has begun. And Sherilyn, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be with you again, Greg.
Well, Lyndon Johnson, of course, said this week back in 1964 that we're the richest nation in the world. And there's no reason we can't whip poverty. At that point, 19% of Americans were below the poverty line. Now it's about 15. In the intervening 50 years, it's certainly been much lower than 15%. The recent economic downturn has added the number of people into poverty over the past few years. What is the gauge of measurement here to determine whether this is a pass-fail for the war on poverty? How do you determine whether part of it's working, none of it's working, or anything in the middle?
That's a very good question, Greg. And before I get to that, I just want to say, so, you know, poverty rate then when I started these programs was 19%, and now it's 15%. So if you look at that, a 4% difference, and you think about all of these public assistance programs and how much they cost, and all we've seen in 50 years is a 4% decrease. To me, you know, not even knowing the metrics, Greg, that's not something that impresses me. So let me start the conversation by saying that. But the other way that we can, in particular, I look at things is I find it that it's a very curious coincidence that the issues that started to plague the black community, Greg, the higher incarceration rate, the drug use, the rise, and I would say even explosive rise in single unwed mothers, all of these problems really began to plague the black community in the 1960s, which kind of coincided with the development of these social programs. And these very same problems still plague the black community as these public assistance programs get larger and larger.
Now, as you point out here, Sherilyn, this was intended to be helpful. People on the left saw single mothers and said, well, we certainly don't want those single mothers to be without food for their children. And so they came up with the assistance for families with dependent children and WIC and all this stuff. But all of a sudden, that became an incentive.
Greg, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly where I was going. Here's the thing. A good number of these public assistance programs are exactly a disincentive to having a cohesive family because you're penalized if you have a man in the home. So how can these possibly be, I mean, again, they are contributing to the breakdown of the black family. Not only black families, but families in general. I don't care. You know, poverty stretches across all socioeconomic statuses and races. And I've got to tell you, again, these public assistance programs are contributing to the breakdown of families because you get more money if there isn't a man in the home. And the other thing to keep in mind is that when we reflect back on 50 years, exactly, 50 years of programs, you know, they really started with FDR, right? Because he started a number of the public government programs during the Great Depression and during, you know, before World War II. And what he warned, quote, that the welfare state must not become a narcotic and a subtle destroyer of the spirit, end quote. And let me emphasize, a subtle destroyer of the spirit. In some communities, public assistance programs have become a subtle destroyer of the spirit. Because when you're looking at, unfortunately, multi-generations of families who have been on public assistance, where is the incentive for individuals to want to start businesses, become entrepreneurs? It's just not there. It's not there, Greg.
Marco Rubio gave a speech to the American Enterprise Institute where he said that the biggest help for anyone in getting out of poverty is a marriage, a two-parent home. And on
right.
The left on Twitter, that was roundly mocked, as I'm sure you saw.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you believe, A, that that is right that he said that, and why do you think so many were so dismissive of that?
Part of the problem is the narrative from the left, perhaps well-intentioned, can't really speak to their intentions, but it's this patriarchal sort of notion and belief that we need to take care of everyone. I look at the impact on families when we really don't want the government taking care of families. We want those families taking care of their own families. And I think that is, you know, maintains morale among parents and families. It gives people a sense of self-worth. I mean, I can't imagine how families and generations of families feel if they know that their meals are being provided by the government. I mean, that doesn't really give people a sense of purpose, an entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, again, I think let's go back to what FDR says. It's a subtle destroyer of the spirit. And I think that's very problematic, Greg. And my other point is that after 50 years, when we see the growth of these programs, we see that eventually the poverty rate is only decreased 4%. Isn't that really, I mean, a message to our government, to policy leaders, to congressional leaders, that we really need to come up with some solutions? And perhaps we need to look at some of these programs and figure out how to make them more efficient, how to improve them, how to perhaps cut the fat within them. But come on, Greg. I mean, we ought to be able to do better than this. We're the leader of the free world, I think.
Well, let's talk about that in our last minute or so here, Sherilyn, because we saw Rubio in his speech call for more action on the state level, have them bear more responsibility. Let's assume for a moment that you could get Congress and the president to radically reconsider how they address poverty and the way the unemployment benefit debate is going right now. That seems like a pretty high bar to clear in both parties. But if there were general principles you think folks should follow on the federal, state, or local level in terms of what's most effective in combating poverty, what are the general solutions?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up the point, because you know what? I don't even want to focus on Congress. I want to look at the local level here, because it's the local city council, all the way down to dog catcher. They're the ones that are responsible for revitalizing their community. That's the example of Walmart. I'm sure you recall, Greg, when Walmart was interested in coming to the district, to Washington, D.C., and the hurdles that they had to jump through in order to bring a business to Washington, D.C., which would create jobs. And, you know, Greg, people forget what businesses coming to communities mean. What does that mean? That means, yes, jobs, but it also means the neighborhood improves. Restaurants come. The corner liquor store all of a sudden is going to reface the front of its building. It adds morale to the community. People take pride in their community. So, you know, bringing businesses to a community has an enormous ripple effect. And, you know, that's not on Congress. That is on local leadership, local leaders, and local government officials to put those policies in place, which will improve their communities, improve the lives of people in those communities.
Sherilyn, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
I appreciate being with you and also to your listeners. Thanks so much.
Sherilyn Harley-Lebon is co-chair of the Project 21 National Advisory Board. Project 21 is a coalition of black conservative leaders. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.